So Malati, thank you very much for coming down. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. It's super cool. I'm excited.
And thank you for all your amazing work that you've been doing. I mean, I've been in Bali now 6 years and really felt the impact of what you've been doing, been privileged to work with you a little bit over the years down at Potato Head. And yeah, thanks a lot. And congratulations, by the way, on your Forbes Under 30. What a great achievement to get recognized for the great work you're doing. That's such an amazing thing. And you started pretty young, right? You 12-year-old. How did this all begin?
I mean, for me, it feels like almost a lifetime ago. It's barely even 7 years ago for me. But I guess growing up in Bali, you have such a different way of living. Whether that's how you interact with nature at an early age, that already like just sets in such a strong connection to nature. And I think with that, with the love of nature and, you know, just being aware that there was something happening to the environment. Plastic pollution was ending up literally everywhere. Whether you go for a walk in the beach or swim in the rivers or the ocean, there's plastic. And I think that was a big trigger and a wake-up call for me and my sister. And we looked at each other at 10 and 12 and said, you know what? It's not rocket science. What can we do? And it's not like there was a business plan or a strategy. I think it was more a passion project that we thought maybe it would take a summer, you know, a summer project. And here we are 7 years later, still campaigning, still at the forefront of, you know, changing mindsets, general awareness and policy change.
Awesome. And you mentioned obviously growing up in Bali, and there is a real connection to nature here. What lessons do you feel we can learn from the Balinese culture and the way of life here in Bali? And even though it is becoming a lot more modern than maybe when you were growing up,
right,
there's still the culture here, they're still very tied to their roots and doing it the right way. What lessons do you think we can learn from the community here and the life here in Bali?
Oh, there's so much. I mean, look at the way that we even value both white and black, as in evil and good, or, you know, the energy and the balance that is embedded in our culture. I think the respect to that has kind of always been a lesson that my parents have always tried to teach, and being open to hearing both sides of the stories. And that comes into our work as activists, really understanding both why we're what our values are and the good of it, but also understanding the other side of the story in order to break that down. So I think that has been a huge lesson that Bali has taught me. And then, you know, Trihita Karana, that's one of the main ways of living. It's not a religion, it's a lifestyle, really, where people connect and are in harmony with the people around them, the environment around them, as well as the spirit within themselves. And I think that, you know, we were never raised with any other religion or belief, but other than this simple way of Trihita Karana, which is very Balinese.
Beautiful. And your green school education, what sort of impact has that played in you becoming an activist, or just your mindset? Like, for people that maybe don't know what green school is, do you want to give a little bit of...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, so green school is this bamboo cathedral in the middle of the jungle. It's a school where we have just a river running through it. We are taught to make our own gardens, and there's no walls in the classrooms. And my sister and I were part of the pioneer family that came to green school when it was an idea and it was just opening its doors. I think I had 6 kids in my class when we first started. And there we were, you know, just super eager. Math classes were out in the rice fields, planting and, you know, growing rice. And for me, I think it really shaped my understanding of just the way that things can be. That previously, even though I was maybe only 8 or 7 when I first went to green school, I had already had this experience that school was meant to be a certain way. You had to have good grades, you have to show up early. If you didn't, there were massive consequences. And I think switching to green school, that completely changed my mindset on how education can look. And also, the main philosophy of the school is really to just pump out green leaders. So we were entirely in charge of, you know, how we wanted to shape our education. And for me as a student, going from second grade all the way to graduation, I took that to my advantage, and they actually provided the space and the time for me to grow my passion into something like Bye Bye Plastic Bags. If I was probably at any other school, it would not have happened, I don't think.
It's amazing that to be given that sort of freedom, to be able to sort of do things that are maybe outside of the curriculum,
right,
and lead by example and do all of those things. And one thing, when I visited green school, I've noticed is all the kids are just super confident. They're all doing talks and lectures and campaigning, and it's just unbelievable to see the difference in the kids growing up there to maybe conventional schools in England or the States. It's a completely different mindset. It's awesome. And we're living in a pandemic, a global pandemic, first of its kind in 100 years. We've got some rain behind us, life in the tropics, so you probably hear a bit of noise on the camera. But yeah, crazy stuff going on in the world. What's happening in America, COVID. Do you feel that this could bring around a bit of a shift in consciousness where people do become more aware of some of the big issues, whether that's climate, whether it's discrimination, even hunger, all of these terrible things that have been accepted by and large by the system for so long, the cracks are really opening and coming to the surface. Do you see this as being a time where we could actually instigate serious change, and the work that you've been doing for several years might actually surface rise and it could make bigger impact? What's your thoughts on the whole thing?
I've struggled, honestly. This is one of the things that I really, for the first time in a long time, have a hard time articulating, because it's just so much, and a lot of it is bringing new emotions, a lot of frustration and anger, not only from the younger generation, but just as a global society, this is what we're experiencing right now. I think what COVID has really proven, is that we are capable of change in a short amount of period. One of my biggest questions, in regards to the environment is that one thing that COVID has really proven is that governments can enact changes and regulations almost instantly, where, we have national laws that it's mandatory to wear masks in public, or lockdowns, right? And why can we not apply or shift that into the environmental regulations? Why are climate change regulations or, plastic pollution restrictions only happening in timeframes of 2030, 2040. I think that this is allowing us to kind of reflect and also prepare for what is to come after the pandemic. I think there's a lot of refocusing, reshaping, but I do hope that, and I often question myself, I'd have no idea where we're going, but I often wonder whether it's enough. Prior to the pandemic, we had signs all over the world, whether it was a flood, and Jakarta was underwater, Australia was on fire. In Chile, we had the ongoing protests and riots, and it just didn't seem to shake the world enough. Nobody was taking serious, tangible action to a world that we're actually proud of. So I think what COVID was able to do, which climate change struggles doing, is actually make it tangible. People felt the immediate impact and effect, not only to their neighbors, but to them directly. So as soon as you feel the fear, and again, fear is the main stream that we're seeing right now, is then they start changing. But how do we make people understand that climate change, although you don't see it, I mean, right now we're hearing it with the rain, it's not supposed to rain right now, but how can we make that connect to people individually so that we can change and make those changes just as fast and just as importantly as we did for the pandemic? So I think for me, there is a huge opportunity here to shift narrative, but I still question whether it's enough. Are we just not going to take, what we learned during this isolation period, or, scrolling through social media and learning more about what is happening around the world, and are we just going to stay back in our fear and just return to normal?
So climate change, really it's climate crisis. I mean, if you look at the studies, top scientists are saying, the reality is we might not have long left. And COVID, did instill fear. People thought it was probably quite serious, and we took very fast action, the necessary action at the time. But it's, it's repairable. Some people will get sick, it's terrible. But by and large, most people will recover, the world will remain. However, climate crisis, if something does happen, it might not be repairable. There might not be any human beings left on the planet. So we need to sort of realize that and act fast. It is a global crisis. How do we sort of mobilize and act, on a level of activation of what you're doing, bring that to the forefront of mainstream society and say, let's deal with this crisis, because it is an emergency. Like, that's what we need to see it as, an emergency, not a global warming or a change.
Right. Yeah. And I think that that's also, you know, one of the things people box things in their heads and label things. And I think that that was also a tactic in order for us to actually keep them separate, when actually they are so interconnected. You know, racial injustice, environmental injustice are deeply embedded. And if we don't work on both of them, we will never succeed on any of them. So I think that, you know, we do have to shift as well the way that we're looking at it. We have an opportunity right now to be doing that on an individual scale. As an industry leader, you have the opportunity. There is a time right now that we have not been given, and it's right there. But are we going to take it or not?
So here in Bali, we have Nipi, which happens once a year, the day of silence, where everything stops, no electricity, nobody's allowed to leave the house, all these sort of things. And it happened quite recently here in Bali, and it was unbelievable to see how clear the sky was. And I've never seen stars so bright in my life. It was like the galaxy had opened up. And during that, we were in a pandemic as well, and you could just feel that the air was cleaner. Some of the recent studies were saying that the world is starting to repair itself after like weeks, not even years, after weeks, it was starting to repair itself because of the lockdown. That, for me, is saying something. We need to sort of take a bit of a step back, look at all of this consumerism, production that we're doing, and, you know, the world is telling us something. Do you feel we can look at what the Balinese are doing here with Nipi, and is that something we could try and implement on a global level, even if it's one week a year where everybody's forced to stop, the environment has a bit of a breather, and human beings as well, we all have a bit of a breather, for the whole planet. Do you think that's something we should maybe look at implementing?
Well, I think, quite interesting. You know, I think it's almost happened, not by will, but by, like, you know, top-down sort of approach, where people have been forced to stay indoors, kind of shut down their lives, and move to an alternate route of either working from home, learning from home, studying from home. So in a way that Nyupi kind of globally did happen, but not with the same like essence of why we do it here in Nyupi. What I hope this lockdown globally kind of taught or showed more in a better way, in a stronger way, you know, when you hear activists saying, yeah, you know, imagine if every single person on the earth just made one small change, like, just think about it. It's very difficult for people to actually tap into their own power as a consumer, as an individual, and they say, yeah, but it won't really matter if I do anything. Now, when we all were forced to stay indoors and not go on flights and, you know, be more conscious about our consumption, you could actually physically see it. So I hope that that's, you know, in one way, kind of, it laid it out so clearly in front of us that we, after COVID, really make the conscious decision to almost move more in that direction of being more selective and effective with the way that we go through life. But at the same time, you know, where, yes, there is clearer waters and clearer skies, dolphins are coming out, because of lockdown in countries like, for example, all throughout Africa, there are more poachers going out and taking advantage of this lockdown. They're here, even locally, you know, I'm seeing more construction sites. All of a sudden, the rice field that was there is no longer there because nobody knows what's necessarily going on. So there is a very thin line that I think is hard to identify, but also there is a clear how we should move forward and how we shouldn't move forward. And that's, I think, something that I worry about. And that's, again, my question of, is it enough? Are we actually understanding the message or not?
Interesting. It's just, yeah, as human beings, we just can't seem to get it right all the time. And you've been an activist for quite some time and part of the youth movement, and we've seen that growing increasingly, you know, around the world. There's a big movement going on of people like yourself and the activism community, which is growing, creating impact. Why do you think it takes younger people what to do this, and they're almost educating the adults? And is this, do you feel, is like this is a growing movement that's going to get bigger and create more impact? Like, where do you think it's stemming from?
Oh yeah, definitely. I think that the generation that I'm a part of is unstoppable, and we will only continue growing. I think we're a part of a generation that has never had, you know, previous generations never had so much access to information as we do now. It's one click of a button, one Google search engine that we do, and we understand, or we can read up, and we can learn as much or as little as we choose to do. Where we learn is also a huge thing of where we get our information from, but I think overall there is this understanding that there are things that are happening that are clearly not correct. And I think that that is what triggers us to say, okay, well, we don't see it in a short term of 4 years in a political office. We don't see it in the short term of being a CEO of one company. We see it as our life. And I think that that's where we're then motivated to take actions now. We don't want to wait until we're older. I think we're only going to grow.
And you're setting up Youthtopia. Do you want to talk a little bit about what that is and why you set it up?
Yeah, Youthtopia is the new project that me and my sister are working on, our team, our global team. Really with the 7 years of experience with bioplastic bags, something that we had the opportunity to do was just travel around the world and share our message. And what happened was that we were ending up in classrooms in New York City, in Tokyo, or even sometimes like getting on a boat to some of the nearer islands here in Indonesia. And the funny thing is that we started recognizing a pattern of the same question kids were asking, no matter what background, no matter what age or where they came from. And they always asked, how can we do what you do? And that's really where Youthtopia comes in, because bioplastic bags really focuses on plastic pollution, sustainability, the environment, but we saw a bigger potential because our generation was so hungry to learn more, to actually get the knowledge on how to be an activist, how to be a change maker and create tangible impact in your community. And schools, the education system generally is not providing this. So Youthtopia is creating space for young people to come together and learn and share from each other through short and meaningful peer-to-peer content. So what we're doing is we're getting a whole network of the most active frontline young change makers with real life stories and real life backgrounds of what they did, putting that into programs for the uprising young change maker. If you want to know how, again, the most important thing is to relate to it. And if you see someone that's your age doing something incredible, you start thinking and start questioning, wait, if they can do it, we can do it too. And I think that this is something that we had insight through bioplastic bags and our journey and the network that we've built, speaking to over 75,000 students. We are right now signing on over 250, I don't want to say A-list change makers, but like really the top, the most incredible young people to be part of the Youthtopia circle of youth, who will then be your mentors and peer learners. So I'm really excited. I think especially in a time like now, when I feel so down and kind of lost, I think that the project and the other people part of it is what keeps me motivated.
Such a great platform for people to learn more, get involved. It's a great, yeah. I often wonder that, like where do people go? Like if you all think about, okay, I want to become active, I want to mobilize, where do you go? And I guess that's a perfect platform to look at and be involved in.
You know, I think, you know, we're not a school, we're not a university. We're really offering those skills and those tools of everything from public speaking, organization, how to do a safe march and protest, how to reach and speak to your government to actually get an outcome. What is the most effective ways to bring a petition into implementation? All of these skills that I think 12-year-old Malati would have loved to have a peer that I could turn to.
Yeah, well, you've got the experience and the fact that you've done it, you're a living example. I think people will connect with that. It's not like an adult saying, this is the way you should do it. You've done it. And people are going to connect with that and feel it's a real thing. So yeah, awesome. Good work on setting that up. And you've been pretty active in, obviously, Bye-Bye Plastic Bags. That was such an amazing success. You completely changed the island. And you've been, as you mentioned, the plastic pollution crisis. It's funny because my six-year-old, I'm educating him, and my four-year-old, but the six-year-old, he understands a bit more, on the plastic pollution crisis and not buying plastic from the store. And when we're having conversations about it, as a six-year-old, he's sort of saying, why would you want to ever put plastic in the ocean, and why are people doing it? He can't work it out in his puristic mind why human beings would want to ultimately destroy the planet and in turn themselves. And it is pretty basic, the fact that we just can't understand that. It's unbelievable. I mean, how much progress do you think we've made in terms of the plastic issue, the pollution issue, since when you started? Do you think we've made any progress or a bit of progress, or do we need, obviously we need to do a lot more, but where do you think we are today? How can we make more impact in that?
So you can ask any of my friends or the people closest to me. I'm a bit of a party pooper and way too serious. So I think that there's so much work left to be done, and you know, we're only at the beginning. Even though the ban came into place, that's one piece of the puzzle, not at all the final solution. But I do think we have to celebrate those steps, otherwise the journey and the movement just takes and feels too heavy. So celebrating little victories is what I've learned as an important lesson. However, you know, if you take in consideration, bioplastic bags was not unique at all in the sense of what we were trying to push forward. People before us, organizations before us, have been talking about this for ages. And yet when we came in at such a correct time because people were ready for it. I think also what helped was it was coming from the younger generation. It was coming from us just simply demanding nothing else that we see this change happen. But at the same time, it still took us, with a lot of our partners and like-minded people on the island, it still took us 6 years to ban single-use plastic bags. And that's one single-use item. When you see statements on big stages around the world from our government saying, we're going to reduce 70% of the waste by 2025, that's in 5 years. What changes have we seen? Not enough, not fast enough. There needs to be space, yes, for socializing, for changing mindset, but that's the role of organizations like Bioplastic Bags that spend most of the time out in the field, like all of these other startups that are, you know, feeding most of their energy and time into spending time in schools, socializing with Banjars. So I think we need to see more top-down initiative on saying, okay, there needs to be consequences for plastic production. There needs to be more consequences on, you know, in general, waste management. I mean, I think that there is a bigger picture. Not at all would I have thought that, you know, entering in bioplastic bags suddenly opened a spider web of the bigger issue of waste management, separation, collection, all of the nitty gritty. But I do think, you know, there are goals that have been set out. Even recently, actually, when I was in Davos at the World Economic Forum, it was stated that we want to reduce 40%. We want to be plastic pollution free by 2040. What does that mean? How does that, you know, I think what I'm most frustrated of, not just here in Indonesia, but just globally, when we look at the, you know, climate change goals that are being set out, there is not a tangible, what's the 12-month plan? What is every single island going to implement from now until the end of the year? What kind of convention, not only conferences and gatherings, but socializations happening? More young people need to be included in that, because when we are equipped with the knowledge, the transparency from the top down, then we can accelerate that change. So I think, long story short, you know, there are guidelines and goals set in place, which is great, but it's now the time to move it into action. Because we're not talking about time frames of 10, 15 years, especially with the 2025, that's in the next 5 years. And we need to start taking action faster.
Mm. And do you feel a lot of these governments, corporations, it's a case of box ticking? They're like, oh, we need to look like we're doing something, so let's just say in the next 10 years we'll try and if there's no regulation, there's no plan, you know, and then 10 years later, it's, you know, maybe there's a new CEO or a new, you know, whoever's implementing it.
I definitely, yeah.
It's that crisis thing. It's like it needs to be. You know, looked upon as a crisis and not just something which we'll do in the future. That's where we need to get it to.
I know. I think we also need to keep in mind that, you know, a lot of these goals are further down the line and they don't even last in one single, like, official run of a political term. So then you can ask yourself, well, is the regulation or the goal strong enough with guidelines that the progress that we're making in one term, does that continue within the last year in the new term of another person? And that's something that we struggled with the ban. I honestly think that if we would have gotten it within one, because we did two governor runs. So you could see that with one shift of a political round, you have to start from square one. That's not efficient at all. And yeah, it definitely scares me, but I do think, and I must say that I think that the intention is there. And surprisingly, oftentimes I do find myself in meetings, one being probably one of the three women in a very full room, or one, the only one below the age of 30. But I do say that the intention of taking action is there. But the knowledge on how to execute it, you know, may not be there. And I think that's where I always think of sitting on the other side of the table, being open to saying, okay, this is how other countries have done it. Here's how we've done it as an organization led by activists. And having that open dialogue, I think, is really important. But being bold enough to actually execute when you have the power to make the change needs to be utilized a lot more.
So it's kind of the intentions are there. People or companies want to do the right thing. They just don't quite know how yet because it's still perceived to be in its infancy.
Yeah.
So it's kind of taking it to that next step or that next level of, okay, let's accelerate this.
And
I wonder if there's anything out there where companies can go to. I mean, do you know of anything where you can, where there's sort of systems or some instructions on, okay, I want to change my company, I want to change myself as an individual, where do I start? I mean, is there anything out there that exists?
Well, there are like 600 different metric systems of where you can go, and that's what also makes it really confusing. There is not, you know, the UN put something out, big organizations like, you know, the Alliance to End Plastic Waste or all of these coalitions, Ellen MacArthur Foundation puts something out. There's lots of Plastic Pollution Coalition. They put a lot of great resources out there. I think just generally what we're seeing as an excuse of governments or people in power of industries are saying that the people are not ready for it. And I think that this is where, again, stepping into the role of a consumer, actually being mindful about what you're taking off the grocery shelves is super important. But it's not where we say change needs to happen and the consumer needs to lead it. I think it's, again, that thin balance of a top-down approach and grassroots and meeting in the middle. I think it's kind of, you can go chicken and egg all day long.
Yeah, I guess if enough of us on a micro level, as you mentioned, the individual could start to make a small change, and there's enough individuals, then hopefully the companies or the corporations will listen because the demand will be there. People aren't gonna, they want to change. Don't want to purchase things in single-use plastic anymore. And hopefully that might start, you know, if it becomes profitable for the bigger companies, they might shift that way. If people do want to start, you know, if you're at home, you know, listen to this or just wanting to live more sustainably, where's a good place to start? I mean, just as a beginner, you haven't really thought about it much. Where does somebody start to lead or to start living a more sustainable lifestyle?
I would say, first and foremost, there isn't a global copy-paste that you can do. The most impactful way that you can contribute is by educating yourself on the local solutions, the local organizations. So, you know, tap into, first things first, ask if there's a zero waste store near you. What kind of organizations are active? Can you volunteer your time? Can you learn from these organizations? You know, here in Bali, there's, a popular spread right now of zero waste stores. There are a ton of organizations that you can ask to, whether it's for your waste separation, your waste composting. There are lots of different organizations, but I think for us, like, the number one message that we've always said is just do your local homework and ask, you know, the internet, ask social media, who is active and who is the best person you can learn from.
It's the whole kind of reduce, reuse, recycle, that whole kind of thing. And then,
almost going beyond the 3 R's, right? You also have to look at just a bigger scale. The 3 R's are so like 2012.
Yeah, I guess it's probably a place like if you don't know anything about it and you're just starting to become aware of the situation, rather than being overwhelmed and having to change all of these habits that you've had for a lifetime, how do you simplify it enough? And I think for someone like you, it's a very basic way of looking at it because you're living it, you're doing it. But if somebody that, you know, grew, like when I was growing up, nobody was even thinking about this. I mean, not where I was living, like Northeast England, it was not a conversation, not my community anyway.
Yeah.
So to then unwind, however old you are, you know, years and years of being taught one way, and then to unlearn that, there has to be a bit of a simplistic approach, even though it's a very complex.
True. And I mean, I do think, you know, watching documentaries have, for me, like, been a huge shrinker, a huge, like, emotional trigger to continue going forward. You know, like, I remember watching Racing Extinction, for example. That was like a pivotal moment for me. Watching, a Plastic Ocean, watching recently even the story of plastic. I mean, there's so much great content out there. If you're ready to make the decision to change the way you live, start by consuming and digesting all of the information that's out there, because it's already there. People have been trying to, you know, lay it out in a simplistic, easy way to for people to learn and for people to change. So it's out there, and I think, you know, starting at a place of learning is good.
So we talk about sustainable design. Brands, corporations, the companies, they all now have responsibility to start changing their acts, look at more sustainable production, and just consciously operating on a different level. Are you seeing a shift at the moment with a lot of brands doing that? Where do you feel we are at the moment? If, as a consumer, you want to start living more sustainably, but you don't necessarily want to compromise where you're going to go extreme of not buying anything and, you know, maybe only buying secondhand, do you think there's enough brands out there that offer alternatives in terms of, you know, producing things that are ethically made or aren't killing the environment? Do you think there's enough out there?
I don't think that there's enough out there. I don't think we've reached, you know, the level that it's entered even mainstream. I think it's still a pretty unique space. I mean, here on Bali, we're incredibly lucky to have, you know, almost every corner you turn, there is something about sustainability, you know, whether it's, you know, just in almost in every single department. I think there's a huge drive here on Bali. But when I travel around the world, I think, you know, interestingly enough, I do think that we're a little bit ahead in the mindset change and the education, the awareness here in Indonesia than, for example, in the West. And it's interesting because when you hear the, you know, a Western's perspective, they look at Indonesia and they think, you know, they're so far behind. And I'm like, what do you mean? Do you know where your trash is going? Do you know what happens when you take something off the grocery shelf? And simple things like that, they won't be able to answer. We can answer it because we can directly see it. And I think that that direct experience allows us to then leapfrog almost into a different kind of way. And where I think it's still slow, there's a lot more options than in the West. But I do think, you know, for example, in grocery stores, in Europe, for example, you see more and more like bulk sections, where you still have like mass production of plastic on shelves right there, but then there's this tiny select, almost in the corner, shuffled somewhere, there's a bulk option. And I think that, you know, slowly people's awareness as consumers are targeting that, and it will be then forced to expand space in the grocery store. But on the note of just sustainability in general, I hope, one of the things I hope out of this entire time that we're living in is that we actually understand that we have to respect nature more. Whether it's, you know, whether you're in a business that creates products, how can you make that more sustainable? How can you actually respect nature from production all the way to end lifestyle? How can we become more circular? And I don't think we're being as creative as we can, not yet in all industries.
I think you're right. I mean, all of the answers do lie in nature. I mean, the fundamentals of circular, you know, regeneration, everything just as naturally recycles itself. I mean, we are seeing waves now of there's almost like a new material revolution going on at the moment, where people are looking into natural materials and using technology to turn things like seaweed or different natural sort of materials that you might not think of using for certain purposes.
So that is true.
So there is a bit of that going on, I've noticed at the moment, and I think that will probably accelerate in the coming years of.
I hope it accelerates. I think I know from knowing some of these entrepreneurs, one of the things that they lack is either political frameworks that allow them to enter the market on a large scale, as well as the funding to help them as a startup, as a new invention, to actually scale. So I think that that's interesting. You know, we also have to understand that there needs to be a sort of environment for these new ideas to come out. So I think while we have all the incredible innovators and smart people just coming up with all the solutions that we could implement like this, the environment for that to come in is not yet ready. And that's what I think the role as activists, we kind of urge and we work at the system and say, you have to be ready for all of the incredible things that are either already invented or that are coming right now. So I think that, you know, we're in an exciting time where things are shifting and mixing. And I think the frustration of just young people and what we're seeing now, we've seen in 2019, a huge uprising in the youth movement from frustration and from, Just frustration that it's not happening fast enough. And that's why with 2020, we were almost hit pause in a way that we had to globally refocus, reshape. And that's why I think also a lot of, you know, CEOs at a human level or political figures at a human level have also seen that we cannot continue the way that we were. So hopefully, fingers crossed, we actually can move in a different direction.
So do more with less, saying used by Buckminster Fuller, and it's something which I don't think has ever been more relevant than today. For example, I could grab a coconut from here in my garden and actually, not me personally, but it's possible to actually create a pair of sneakers out of one thing. So now you're seeing people making leather from coconut, they're making the rubber from a different part of the coconut. You can use all of these different things like from nature with technology and completely do something that you would never imagine.
Right.
But as you mentioned, the issue is then, you know, funding that, how do people find out about that? And then how do you scale that? Because a lot of these big companies, they're built on volume. Mm-hmm. Now, volume and globalization, that doesn't really go hand in hand with sustainability. I think going back to local and looking at things that we do have in abundance, like materials that are around us, and completely revolutionizing how we make products, I think that's where things are going to go. It's just how do we implement that on a large enough scale to actually make a big enough change? That's the thing.
Yeah, and that's the actual core of it all is that nothing in nature is wasted, nothing. And everything we create is wasted. It just has such a short lifespan. And I think if we're able to, you know, almost mimic nature, be inspired by nature, and actually implement it through the design of any product, anything that we get in our hands, you know, we know that it'll end up in that circular lifestyle. I think that's the goal.
Cool, Melati. So just on an ending note, any advice for any young activists or any young people that would like to become more active, would like to build a more sustainable future? Of course, you have Utopia, but just in a nutshell, your experience, what you've learned, what bit of advice could you give to the youth coming through today?
Well, like my main message, especially in the light of recent events, I think just be kind to yourself. There's so much going on, so many problems that yes, we need to fix, but find your place. I think finding something that you're really passionate about is a good way to start, and connect it to a problem. Then narrow it down, find a tangible way. Bioplastic bags, right? Take that as an example. We could have said overnight we want plastic pollution to just end and we want no single-use plastic ever. But we knew that in order to start the conversation and actually to prove that we were kids and yes, we wanted to get change happening, we chose a tangible one item, bioplastic bags. So find that one thing that you're passionate about, that you're excited about, and build your team. I think that's key. No matter how good of a leader you think you are or how good your idea is, you will always need that system of support around you. So go out there. Don't wait until you're older. Don't wait until someone sets a business plan for you, because that's not how it's going to work. I think if you really lead from a place of passion and authenticity, you'll go way further.
Amazing. Melati, keep up the amazing work. You're an inspiration to all of us. The world needs you. Keep doing what you're doing. And thanks for coming on. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.